What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in.
It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters, and I'm Dominic Chu in for Frank Holland today. Here's your 5 at 5. Stocks working to build on gains after the S&P and NASDAQ post positive sessions. Futures right now in the green. It's not a bubble. The consensus view from two of Wall Street's brightest minds on why stocks haven't run up too far, too fast. Disney securing victory in its months-long fight with Nelson Peltz, but shareholders seeming to be less than pleased with the outcome. Plus, a potential deal around Paramount Global apparently picking up some steam here. And our week-long look at some of the best ideas for Q2 and beyond. The beaten-up EV maker our next guest is all revved up about. Get it? It's Thursday, April 4th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to the show, Worldwide Exchange. Thanks for being with us on this morning. Let's kick off the hour with a check on U.S. equity futures, which are right now trying to find some sense of at least stability with regard to getting some upside moves here. We're in the green right now. The Dow's implied higher by 120 points, the S&P higher by 17, and the NASDAQ up by 25. Stocks, though, were coming off a mixed session yesterday, the S&P and NASDAQ notching their first and second positive sessions over the last three. The Dow making it three straight days worth of losses, meanwhile. Checking in on the bond market with the 10-year yield hovering right around its highest levels for the year, currently trading up slightly to 4.36%, the two-year note yield 4.68%, and the 30-year long bond just a hair below 4.52%. Let's take a look at oil prices, with WTI and Brent prices up about 2.75% so far this week, on pace for their second straight week worth of gains. And right now, those prices are lower just by about 0.1% for both U.S. benchmark West Texas Intermediate, $85.32 there. World benchmark ICE Brent crude futures, $89.25. Meanwhile, let's see how Europe is shaping up as its trading day is in the early stages. Sylvia Amaro is in our London newsroom with the early action from the continent. Sylvia.
Good morning, Dom. Indeed, we are seeing European equities. They have been trading for about 2 hours now. And this is the picture when you look at the major bourses across the continent. We have with the FTSE 100 trading up by almost 0.4%. Over in France, we are seeing the main market up by about 0.2%. And some of the narratives that we're monitoring this morning come after data did show that PMIs for the month of March actually proved that positive economic growth has actually taken place in the Eurozone in the month of March. So that's naturally a positive. Yesterday, though, we also got inflation numbers for the Eurozone that came in below what markets were expecting. And this is important as we prepare to hear from the ECB next week. But I also want to show you what's the picture, really, when it comes to the sector divide at this stage. And really, it's important to highlight what we're seeing when it comes to the top performers. Basic resources up by more than 1.5%. And here, Dom, it's all about the fact that we're seeing miners trading higher. We are seeing also record prices when it comes to gold, and that is feeding into the narrative. But overall, there's also a question mark here about the upcoming data stateside and what that will mean also for the Fed.
All right, Sylvia Amaro with the latest from Europe. Thank you very much for that. Stocks are coming off that mixed session as investors fear that the Fed may keep rates higher for longer and will have to adjust their expectations for those rate cuts. The fresh pressure coming off a strong start to the year, adding to the market's impressive run. Speaking to CNBC just yesterday, Greenlight Capital's David Einhorn and Point 72's Steve Cohen downplaying worries about bubble risks in the market.
I don't particularly think we're in a bubble. We covered our bubble basket stocks in the first quarter of last year. And right now, all of our shorts are idiosyncratic ideas based on situations with the particular companies that are involved.
I don't see it as a bubble. I mean, I think the markets are discounting some of what they think AI is going to do for companies.
Two big voices voicing some optimism about the markets, or at least not pessimism. Let's bring in Robert Teeter, Managing Director and Head of Investment Policy and Strategy Group for Silvercrest Asset Management. Robert, you heard the comments there. Are we in a bubble in your mind?
I'm going to make it 3 for 3. We're not in a bubble here. When you look back to the bubbles that we've seen in the past, the 90s, there's really no comparison here. Valuations are a bit elevated, but nowhere near those 90s levels. And they're well-deserved in many cases, with higher rates of earnings growth and strong balance sheets. So I don't think we're in a bubble here at all.
Okay, so there's no doubt, Robert, this is not like yet what we saw during the, you know, precursor to the great financial crisis, certainly not during dot-com. But there are pockets of the market that act in that way, and that's maybe the reason why some folks feel as though it could be in a bubble. Those places, specifically in technology, are they worrisome for you?
They're not especially worrisome. Again, for most of these companies, they're growing at a very fast clip in terms of earnings. They tend to have very strong balance sheets. It's not to say that there aren't some areas selectively. You know, we've seen it with the meme stocks pop up here and there, where valuations get a bit out of control and you have these sort of selective bubbles rolling around. But broadly speaking, with technology, those companies are really earning their way into those valuations with strong earnings and strong balance sheets.
Do you feel as though there are still places right now where there is relative value outside of technology? If you look towards the broadening of this market rally, can it continue?
I do think so. Small caps have started to participate, particularly in March. I think that's a trend that could continue. We may be on pause for that a little bit with the Fed policy and the fact that the Fed's probably going to be moving a bit slower than most people had expected. And I think that's one of the catalysts around small cap. But there is a lot of good valuation opportunity in small cap. And those trends in productivity are likely to extend there as well. So while it started off in the large cap space, smart companies in small cap are going to be taking advantage of that productivity as well and using it as an opportunity to boost margins.
How much is the market narrative in the coming months and quarters going to be about whether the Fed will cut interest rates?
I think the Fed is front and center here, particularly leading into at least the June meeting, if not July. In my opinion, the Fed has shifted from being poised and sort of ready to move on the basis of looking at real rates and looking at interest rates versus inflation. And I think they've shifted to more of a hard pause. And it seems to me that they need a catalyst to move now. That catalyst may not come for a while, as inflation has been declining quite slowly. So that's really the struggle we have here, is that earnings in the economy remain quite sound. But the Fed's not likely to provide much help until later into the summer.
Technology, obviously, I talked about before as being the focal point for a lot of investors out there. I'm sure you have to have some kind of a weighting in there as well. Is there a sector outside of technology that becomes your favorite in this kind of environment, given your view on the Fed and what we have to do as an economy and a market going forward?
Yes, we've had a favorable view of the industrial space for some time. Part of that's based on domestic policy, especially in an election year. And we've seen those trends starting to unfold. There's been a lot more spending. You've seen the charts that I have as well on construction spending and manufacturing. You've had this push towards building up durable and resilient supply chains and more activity in the United States. And that benefits the industrial sector. And we've seen tailwinds there in earnings. And I expect that to continue for the course of the year.
All right. That's Robert Teeter, Silvercrest. Thank you very much, sir. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Dom. Great to see you.
All right. For more on what's driving the markets and the trading day ahead, just head over to CNBC.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis. You'll find full interviews, all kinds of analysis over there. Let's get a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Silvana Hinao is here with those. Good morning, Silvana.
Hey, Dom. Good Thursday morning. Apple is reportedly looking at developing home robots after abandoning its electric vehicle ambitions. According to Bloomberg, engineers at the company have been looking into a robot that can follow users around their homes. The report adds Apple, which declined to comment to CNBC, is also looking into a tabletop device that uses robotics to adjust a display screen. And sticking with tech, Alphabet's Google is reportedly considering charging for premium features on its generative AI-powered search engine. This according to the Financial Times, which says the tech giant is looking at a variety of options, including incorporating AI-powered search features into its premium subscription services. A Google spokesperson telling CNBC the company doesn't have any announcements right now, saying it continues to build new premium capabilities and services to enhance its subscription offerings. And an apparent deal around Paramount Global reportedly intensifying. Bloomberg reporting Sherry Redstone, Paramount's controlling shareholder, has reached a tentative agreement to sell her stake to David Ellison's Skydance Media. Now, the report adds that the two sides have agreed on the broad framework of a deal and will use a 30-day window of exclusive talks to work out the details, Dom.
All right. Sylvain Hinault with those details and the headlines. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
Well, we've still got a lot more to come on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors need to know today. But first, gold's record run showing no signs of letting up. Why our next guest is looking up her bullish outlook on that precious metal. Plus, a look at your morning's big money movers and the big bump that Levi's is getting by foregoing the department store business model. And then later on, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is en route to China, set to meet with leaders over there. The big items on her agenda for her sit-downs in Beijing. We've got a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns after this commercial break.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. You are right now taking a look, a live look, at Ports America's Chesapeake Terminal in Baltimore, Maryland. The facility is seeing one of the CSX's first trains arriving in the city this morning, all right, carrying containers from the New York City area that were diverted due to the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge last week. Now, this move is aimed at helping ease any potential trade disruptions due to the closure of the port of Baltimore. So those shots you're seeing now earlier in the day. But again, the CSX train has now routed its way through this particular terminal in Baltimore, Maryland. Meanwhile, gold prices are hovering at record highs right now, hitting another one today above $2,300 an ounce, as Fed Chairman Jerome Powell and other policymakers are sticking to their forecast for interest rate cuts this year, even if the timing of those moves are yet unclear. Gold is up nearly 12% this year, outperforming, believe it or not, the broader S&P 500. Now, if you think that's good, take a look at silver prices, outperforming its more talked about precious metals siblings, up 12.5% this year. So let's get more insight now from Nikki Shields, the head of metal strategy at MKS Pump, a global trader and refiner of gold, silver, platinum, palladium, also trafficking other base metals as well. Nikki, thank you very much for joining us here. I guess the momentum trade is very evident in gold prices. But I'm curious about the view on silver. It's not yet at a record. Could it get there soon?
We think so. You know, it's certainly lagged gold for the most part, but the last few days it has had a bit of that catch-up play. It's got a lot going for it, right? It fundamentally, it's in a deficit since 2021. And when you think about the fact that U.S. growth is outperforming expectations, we're getting that first sign of Chinese growth kind of coming back with those PMIs. And, you know, silver's that it's a inflation hedge, but it's also a high beta cyclical asset. So it sort of plays two parts. And we do think it can reach for sure $30 in the short term.
Nikki, why is it a high beta cyclical asset? What exactly about silver makes it more economically sensitive in that environment?
Well, a large part of silver demand is used in industrial spaces, and it's what is sort of underappreciated is a big part of it is driven by the renewable energy economy. So, It's used across, obviously, 5G, but also electric vehicles, solar panels. And so it really has a bit of that copper-esque to it. And certainly isn't just a precious metal. And we think that that is coming, certainly coming back into play.
Okay, so is there a way or a world, Nikki, where we start to take a look at prices for silver and use them as that derivative play on things like renewable energy, on infrastructure spending, that sort of thing? Does it become now then a fundamental analysis as well about whether there are industrial uses that will drive the demand? And is that going to be a huge part of the price picture going forward?
I think that is the key differentiator between whether we're talking about a $25 to $30 asset or a $30 to $35 plus dollar asset. If we can, if global economic growth can maintain some sort of momentum, silver absolutely can outperform. And I think the narrative is going to be changed to it being a good proxy for the renewable transition for sure.
Now, if you take a look at the way things are shaping up, you mentioned copper as well earlier on. We did mention copper early on. There's been a surge higher there, but it hasn't been the same for other metals and other steel-related products. Can you take us through why you're seeing some of the divergence that we're seeing in copper prices versus other parts of the market as well?
I mean, I think if you take a step back, you know, each commodity or hard asset will have the individual fundamental story. But at the end of the day, you've got growth sort of thawing in China. You've got a G10 rate cutting cycle occurring when inflation is still not quite down to target. And I think that narrative, that macro narrative, is where you're going to get commodities as a whole sort of pick up. And you're going to have to cherry pick which one has a sort of sexier fundamental story. And those will be the first to move into this sort of this regime change where we're going to be having rate cuts into yet still sticky inflation.
And Nikki, just a few seconds left here before we let you go. What is your favorite play in metals right now?
Still silver. We like gold, but we like silver better.
All right. Nikki Shields, thank you very much. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
All right. Still ahead on Worldwide Exchange, Jeff Kilburg lays out the best under the radar play for Q2 and beyond, with one semiconductor maker up 50% so far this year. And spoiler, it's not NVIDIA, that name, when we return after this.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Welcome back. Time now for your Big Money Movers. Three stock stories of the morning so far. Shares of Levi Strauss are rallying as the apparel maker's first quarter results beat forecasts and raised its profit guidance for the full year. Levi's has benefited from cost savings and job cuts and less aggressive discounting on its jeans and denim clothing. The company says nearly half of its sales, half, are now happening online and in its own stores as reliance on department stores fades. CEO Michelle Goss telling CNBC the U.S. market is holding steady after years of volatility, though shares up 8% pre-market. David Einhorn revealing his firm, Greenlight Capital, has bought a stake in Solvay, a European chemicals company based in Belgium. Speaking at the Sohn Investment Conference just yesterday, Einhorn says Solvay has higher margins than typical commodities producers, while that stock trades at just 7 times expected 2024 earnings. Solvay is a major producer of soda ash and inorganic compounds. Those shares are up in Europe after the U.S. depository receipts jumped 14% yesterday. European trading has them up 6.5%. And Etsy is moving higher after Elliott Management pitched its long call on the online marketplace at the Sohn Conference. The activist investor believes Etsy will generate significant multi-year upside. Reuters has reported Elliott has a 13% economic stake in Etsy. The company appointed one of Elliott's portfolio managers to its board of directors back in February. Well, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is on her way to China, set to meet with leaders over on that side of the Pacific. Even before those meetings take place, Yellen is offering some tough talk on Washington's push to protect American businesses against Chinese interests. Megan Casella joins us now with more on the key agenda items for Yellen's big trip coming up to China. Megan.
Good morning, Dom. So that's right. Yellen's going to land in China today for what will be 4 days of meetings across two cities. Her goal is to meet with both current and former government officials, as well as the head of the People's Bank of China and American business leaders working in China. Now, the biggest piece of Yellen's itinerary is going to be devoted to what Treasury has called extended bilateral meetings with He Lefeng. That's her counterpart on the economy. She's going to be focused during those meetings on pressing China for changes in areas where the U.S. has concern. We heard a little bit about this last week. Trade's going to be at the top of that list. So Treasury says that she'll be pushing Chinese officials to address both unfair trade practices and industrial overcapacity issues, which U.S. officials worry could hurt manufacturers across the globe. Other areas of concern likely to come up, according to Treasury, is China's support for Russia's invasion of Ukraine and potential consequences for any violation of the U.S.'s sanctions against Russia. Now, they're also going to be looking for progress in areas with room for cooperation between the two countries. That includes climate, drug trafficking, illicit finance, and Yellen also wants to increase communication between the U.S. and Chinese financial regulators. Now, Dom, this comes, of course, just after President Biden spoke with Chinese President Xi on the phone earlier this week. And while we're not likely to see any major policy developments out of this trip, the goal here is really to continue the administration's work of stabilizing that economic relationship. They're going to be focused on de-risking, as they like to say, and not decoupling. Dom.
Okay, so, Megan, the administration is talking much more with China than they once were. But how much has that relationship actually improved over the course of the last couple of years?
I would say it's both improved, but it hasn't, right? It's definitely on more stable ground than roughly 2 years ago. That was when President Biden really pushed to restart communication between the two countries and really start to move things forward again. At the same time, though, there's a number of pressure points still. The Biden administration actually hasn't undone most of those tariffs that President Trump imposed, even though he has this much calmer attitude towards China and emphasizes that they want to keep lines of communication open. A lot of those are still in place. There's a couple more that we might see start to flare up over the next year or so. China actually just sued the U.S., I think it was last week, at the WTO over aspects of the Inflation Reduction Act. They're really not happy with our stance on export controls, which the U.S. has been pushing its allies, as well as itself, to restrict some exports of mostly semiconductor manufacturing in China. And, you know, there's others there, too, that China says they're not going to stand idly by and just watch this happen. So it's sort of a delicate house of cards.
Yeah. Everything else, including AI and chips as well. Megan Casella, thank you very much. We'll be looking forward to your coverage there. And be sure to catch Secretary Janet Yellen when she sits down with our own Sarah Eisen this Monday on Worldwide Exchange to discuss her trip to China and other economic agenda items. Coming up on the show, signaling signs of headwinds. Why ExxonMobil is looking to downplay expectations around its upcoming earnings release. And if you haven't already done so, please follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple or Spotify or your podcast platform of choice. Worldwide Exchange in audio format. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Dominic Chu in for Frank Holland today. Let's start off the half hour with a check on U.S. equity futures, which are in the green right now. If you take a look at the Dow, it's implied higher by roughly 136 points, the S&P higher by 20 points, and the tech-heavier NASDAQ up by about 97 if these futures moves hold into regular cash equities trading. Taking a look at some of the Dow's pre-market gainers so far right now, you can see overall the moves that we are seeing in Amazon, American Express, Microsoft, and Boeing up all roughly 0.5% overall. Now, digging into the market action, take a look at what's happening with the semiconductors overall. That's been one of those kind of at least tea leaves in the market, a possible leading indicator for that tech trade and by and large the market overall. The VanEck Vector Semiconductor ETF currently up just about maybe 76% over the last year. But we've been seeing kind of this consolidation phase happening right here. So we'll see whether or not those moves in semiconductors indicate any moves coming up. Meanwhile, are there stresses right now developing in the credit markets? Largely, no, so far. This is the iShares iBox High Yield ETF, ticker HYG. It's at the lower end of a recent trading range so far, but still, no signs of real stress yet. So could the market rally continue? At least from a credit perspective so far, no real concern there. And then one other place to watch is in momentum. Gold prices, we've talked about them at large, but take a look at just how parabolic the move has been for gold prices over the course of the past couple of months. hitting again another record high in trading today, currently up about $2,300, $11 per ounce. Sticking with the markets and our week-long look at the second quarter, tapping into some of the brightest minds to find some opportunity, getting their best stock picks for the rest of the year, and some of their under-the-radar plays. Now, so far this week, we've had Victoria Green naming Quanta Services as her top pick, and then Devon Energy as her under-the-radar play. Malcolm Etheridge picking Amazon as his top play, and then Fortinet as his under-the-radar pick. Stephanie Link choosing Las Vegas Sands as her top pick, and then Freeport-McMoRan as her under-the-radar play. Now it's time to bring in Jeff Kilburg. He's the founder and CEO of KKM Financial. He's also a CNBC contributor. Jeff, let's talk a little bit about the playbook for Q2 coming up here and for the balance of the year. What do you think the top play is?
Yeah, Dominic, the top play is a name, and I like, or I should say I love names that a lot of people hate. And when you look at Tesla, that is my top name. It's been stuck in a range, and Elon Musk, the second richest man in the world, has been highly scrutinized and often ridiculed. You know, if you go back to January of 2023, when we digested him buying Twitter, you saw the price of that stock, one of the biggest drawdowns, go down to nearly $100. Here we are at $170, a little bit up in pre, but I think it has the ability to retake its 50-day moving average at 184. And really, the way I'm looking at this and why this is my top play, I'm not looking at EV growth. I'm not looking at this as an EV company. I think this is the purest play, artificial intelligence play out there. And when you talk about that full self-automation driving, that's something that's being underappreciated. And Elon Musk has been so quiet as of late. I think there's something coming. I don't know. I don't have any information, Dom. But it feels like he is going to defend his stake. And the fact that he owns almost 25%, not quite 25%, but the fact that he owns almost 25%, this will allow him to vault his net worth well above $200 billion and reclaim number one man, richest man in the world.
Now, Jeff, you may not consider Tesla to be an EV play. The problem is a lot of people out there consider Tesla to be an EV play, and they were grotesquely disappointed by the deliveries and production numbers that we saw. They came in below even the most bearish analyst estimate coming out there. How long does it take for this thesis to play out if EVs are not your primary reason for playing Tesla?
I think we have to take a step back and realize the EV growth we've seen in the last 5 years, Dom. It's been five steps forward and one step back. The global demand. There's been a lot of consumers who are still reluctant to make that leap. But I think as we move forward with technology efficiency, you will see EV growth demand pick up again. But right here, right now, yes, there's a story in China. Yes, there's a story globally that you are seeing a little bit of a pullback in EV demand. But this is more than just a car company selling electric vehicles. This is a technology company. This is an AI company. When you think about Elon Musk and the abilities he has in all of his companies, if he could get a little bit of focus in the Tesla, I think you will see this name go back and revisit that $300 level, which is a big lofty move, but that is the 52-week high up at $299.
All right, so there's the top play. Your number one draft pick, so to speak, in this whole process, Jeff.
Yes.
Let's take us through now what you think is an under-the-radar bloomer that happens in the second quarter and beyond.
Well, this is an under-the-radar name, but semiconductors are obviously are not under the radar. But Micron. Micron is a name. We just rewind pre-earnings. In the middle of March, I actually put on a CNBC Options Pro article talking about the untapped value. You saw this name, just like every tech name in 2022, nearly get cut in half. Had a great 2023, back about 73%, but it is on fire right now. And as long as their biggest customers, because they develop a lot of memory chips, but as long as you see Apple, Microsoft, and some of the big names like IBM continue to push demand for those chips, you're going to see Micron continue to move higher. Here it is at $130. It was just trading at $94, Dom, pre-earnings just 2 weeks ago. So to see this type of parabolic move, I think there's more room to run, but you do have to be considerate how you have exposure to Micron. That's why we love to use options to define our risk, because if we do see a pullback in semiconductors, which will lead the whole market slightly lower, I think you have to be considerate of owning something at a new all-time high.
All right, top play is Tesla. Under the radar is Micron, even after a 50% run. Let's leave viewers and listeners with your thoughts on the broader market overall. Jeff, is this a market that you can feel comfortable owning for the balance of the year, or are we due for more downside?
No, it is, Dom, but I think we have to remember I've been trading for almost 30 years, and when you see markets move in the way they have since November, markets don't continue to move in a straight line. So I think it'd be very healthy to see some back and fill in volume in the S&P 500 to that 4950 level. That's a 5% pullback. I think that'd be healthy. I think it'd be bought tremendously with all the cash on the side. But right now, the market feels almost like a volleyball trying to be held underwater. Every time it seems to come back, it's being bought with all that cash on the side. If you really do put in 3 rate cuts this year, I think that could fuel us 5 or 10% higher before we see any type of pullback. You know, Dom, it's been over 100 days since we've had a 2% pullback in the S&P 500. But when you get everyone so bullish, specifically the bears of 2023 switching to being bullish, I do have a little bit of a pause right now.
All right. Jeff Kilburg, thank you very much for those thoughts. We appreciate it, sir.
You bet, Dom. See you soon, pal.
All right. Now, tomorrow, we've got Carrie Firestone closing out our week with her top picks for Q2 and beyond, and her under-the-radar play as well. So stay tuned for that. Let's now get a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Silvana now is here with those. Hi, Silvana.
Hey, Dom. Good morning to you. WhatsApp is back up and working after an outage disrupted services for thousands of users worldwide yesterday. Data from Down Detector shows at the peak of the outage, which lasted several hours, impacted more than 24,000 WhatsApp users here in the U.S. Instagram users also reporting some issues. ExxonMobil expects weaker oil and gas prices to hit first quarter profits. In a securities filing, the company also citing a big loss in fuel derivatives. The drop follows 2 years of strong oil and gas prices. Last year, ExxonMobil reported a record first quarter profit of more than $11 billion. The company will report its full results on April 26. And Boeing's new chairman is reaching out directly to the heads of U.S. airlines in an effort to rebuild trust. Bloomberg says Steve Mollenkopf, who was formerly CEO of Qualcomm and a Boeing board member since 2020, is trying to smooth over strained relations with the airline customers who set in motion the company's biggest management shakeup ever. Boeing CEO, chairman, and head of its commercial airline business all announced their departures last week in the wake of the Alaska Airlines door panel blowout in January on a new 737 MAX jet, Dom.
All right, a very grassroots approach to getting customers back. Silvan Hinal, thank you very much for those headlines. All right, turning to Disney's boardroom battle. Shares are under pressure again this morning after sliding 3% yesterday. This after the company defeated activist shareholder Nelson Peltz in that high-profile fight over the entertainment giant's board of directors. Now, the company is saying that preliminary results show that shareholders voted by a substantial margin to elect its entire lineup of board nominees. Let's now bring in Alex Sherman, media reporter for CNBC.com, who's been covering this proxy fight from the beginning and covering Disney for a good number of years now. Alex, let's talk about just how much of an issue it was to put this in the rearview mirror, and then what's left to do now.
Yeah, I think the hard part is still to come for Disney. In some ways, fighting off Nelson Peltz was the easy part here, Dom. You know, look, Nelson Peltz doesn't really have any particular media experience. He ran a very expensive campaign to get on the board for Disney, and he had a good argument, which was that Disney has flubbed succession for years, really. I mean, Bob Iger has pushed back his retirement as the Disney CEO 5 separate times. And when he did leave, he handed the company over to Bob Chapek and had to come right back 2.5 years later, 2.75 years later. So that was the big argument. But in terms of the future of Disney, look, there's a lot of problems that he effectively pointed out, I think, to investors. But it's unclear that him being on the board would have been able to facilitate the answers to any of these questions. And that is, in fact, what Bob Iger has in front of him. What is ESPN's digital strategy? How do you roll that out correctly? How do you start churning out hits at the box office yet again? Disney has been through now a multi-year slump, and this is supposed to be its bread and butter, feature films. How do you get streaming to profitability consistently? These are all open questions for Disney beyond the succession question, and that's where the focus of the company is going to be now.
Okay, so you laid out some of the 3 or 4 points that you think are going to be on the agenda: streaming, profitability, the succession plan, getting hits back into the movie theaters. I wonder now, given what you saw with the shareholder vote, given what you saw with the dynamic with Nelson Peltz and the other activist investors involved in this, How much do you think shareholders will have in terms of patience, and how long will they give them, the Disney board and its management company, to show signs that things are actually going in, moving in the right direction?
Well, I think they'll at least get about, oh, I don't know, 9 months or so, because that would be the length of time before activist shareholders would yet again pile in to start a proxy fight for next year. So that's what I would say is probably the window that Iger and the board are looking at here. How do we avoid such a thing happening to us next year like what we just went through? So he's probably got about three earnings quarters up ahead of him where he can show tangible progress in all of the different avenues that I just laid out. And look, by that time, the one thing I think that Iger will have going for him is he probably should have named a successor then. Not to say that he would step down from the CEO job, but I reported last year that his plan, if he in fact moves forward with it, is to name a successor and then stick around either as CEO or chairman until the end of his contract in 2026. That's the very end of 2026. So he'll still be there a little while, even if he does in fact name an heir apparent.
All right. The heir is going to be a key for a lot of folks out there investor-wise. Alex Sherman, thank you very much as always, and great reporting on this. And by the way, folks, for more on what's next for Disney post-proxy fight, just head over to CNBC.com and read Alex's new piece out this morning. He's also got a great documentary piece about the future of ESPN. You can check that out on CNBC as well. Our own David Faber, meanwhile, sits down with Bob Iger to discuss the conclusion of this board fight coming up at 9 a.m. Eastern time today. A must-watch interview there for Squawk on the Street. Tune in again. Bob Iger, David Faber, 9 a.m. Eastern time. Coming up on the show, the new call on Wynn Resorts saying it may be time to roll the dice. Get it on the stock. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your morning call sheet. Raymond James is downgrading its rating on Bumble to a market perform. It says that while it believes the online dating provider is the best positioned in the space in terms of relevance with younger people, it does see near-term headwinds stemming from changing user habits. Those shares right now down about 2% pre-market. Mizuho is initiating coverage of Wynn Resorts with a buy rating and $131 target price. It sees upside to estimates in Macau as the market recovers and continued growth in Las Vegas as well. So those shares up about half of 1% pre-market. And Goldman Sachs is downgrading its rating on Hertz to sell. It says the full extent of pricing and cost pressures have not yet been priced into those shares. As a result, Hertz shares are down about 3.5% in the pre-market trade. Time now for your global briefing. Taiwan Semiconductor says its critical chip-making equipment is intact following the major earthquake that struck Taiwan just yesterday. The world's largest contract chip manufacturer says a small number of tools were damaged at certain plants, but no key machines were impacted, including its extreme ultraviolet lithography tools, EUV tools. Taiwan Semi has prepared for years for a large earthquake, drawing on lessons from the 2011 disaster at the Fukushima nuclear plant in Japan. Meanwhile, shares of Belgian chemical maker Solvay are higher. David Einhorn revealing the company as his value pick at the annual Sohn Investment Conference yesterday. Einhorn, who runs Greenlight Capital, says Solvay has higher margins than typical commodities producers, though Solvay shares up about 6.5% in European trading. And Volvo car sales rose 25% last month, hitting a new monthly record. The Swedish automaker is majority owned by China's Geely Group. Sales were boosted by Volvo's new EX30 fully electric small SUV and a strong performance in the U.S. and Europe. Volvo says fully electric models account for a quarter now of its global sales. Well, still ahead on the show, the one word every investor needs to know today, plus why our next guest is asking, could the good times be coming to an end for the Magnificent Seven? And a programming note, beginning this Monday, Worldwide Exchange is heading over to London, bringing you the global markets coverage that you always look for, as well as the top stories live from our London newsroom over there. It all starts Monday morning, 5 a.m. Eastern time. New look. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your WEX wrap-up. Bloomberg is reporting that Sherry Redstone, Paramount Global's controlling shareholder, has reached a tentative deal to sell her stake to David Ellison's Skydance Media. The report adds the two sides have agreed on the broad framework of a deal and will use a 30-day window of exclusivity in talks to work out the finer details. Bloomberg also reporting Apple is looking at developing home robots after abandoning its electric vehicle ambitions. Apple declined to comment to CNBC on that matter. The Financial Times is reporting Alphabet's Google is reportedly considering charging for premium features on its generative AI-powered search engine tools. A Google spokesperson telling CNBC the company does not have any announcements at this time. Shares of Levi Strauss are rallying as the apparel maker's first quarter results beat forecasts and raised its full profit guidance for the year. CEO Michelle Goss telling CNBC the U.S. market is holding steady after years of volatility. And SK Hynix says it plans to spend nearly $3.9 billion in Indiana to build a semiconductor packaging plant and research and development facility. It says it expects the facility to create up to 800 jobs by the end of 2030. Well, here's what to watch for today. We will get initial jobless claims and trade deficit data before the opening bell, as well as earnings from ConAgra and Lam Weston. And another busy day of Fed speak with more than half a dozen central bank presidents and governors speaking starting at 10 a.m. Eastern time early into this evening as well. It's a long list of them, as you can see there. Let's get another check on U.S. equity futures. Currently bid modestly, fractionally so right now. You can see the Dow Jones Industrial Average implied higher by roughly 135 points, the S&P by about 18, and 93 points to the upside for the NASDAQ Composite, or the NASDAQ 100 right now, actually. For more on the trading day ahead, let's bring in Courtney Garcia, Senior Wealth Advisor for Payne Capital Management. She's also a CNBC contributor. Courtney, this is a market right now that has some folks skittish, but volatility still remains very low on a relative basis. Can the gains continue in the coming months?
Yeah, we're definitely optimistic that the market can continue higher here. And I think what you're seeing right now is we're continuing to get some really strong economic data, right? Job numbers remain strong. Manufacturing numbers are coming in, remaining strong. Inflation, the big question is how soon and how often the Fed is going to cut interest rates. But inflation is still moderating over the long run. And that's why you're seeing the markets are going to continue to do well here. There's still a lot of cash on the sidelines. You're finally starting to see people dip into that cash as they're not wanting to miss out on this stock rally. There's a lot of money that can still go in, especially if and when those rates start coming down. Your money market funds are immediately going to start pricing lower. That money is going to make its way back into the stock markets. You're just starting to see the beginnings of that.
What catalyzes it further, Courtney? What gets people to say, you know what, I want my money out of money market funds, off the sidelines, so to speak, and back into the equity markets?
The big thing is the expectations of the rates, right? I mean, you saw 2 weeks ago when the Fed came out and indicated, yep, we are still on track. We are trying to lower three times this year. The markets immediately shut up. And that was actually the first week that you finally saw some money come out of money markets. Now, again, when we're seeing some data that inflation is still a little bit sticky here, you're seeing people tamper back a little bit here. But I think you're ultimately going to see that as expectations do come down, inflation will come down over the long run. You're going to continue to see that cash come into the sidelines. So ultimately, some of these bull markets do end up getting chased. People don't want to miss out on the rally. I think it's going to be kind of the slow and steady. You're going to see people getting back in here.
All right. So if they get in there slow and steady, is it going to be back towards the Magnificent Seven stocks?
Short term, probably yes. I don't think we're over that upwards trend here. But I do think as an investor, you want to make sure that you're focusing on the market rally broadening, right? I mean, this year, technology has done fantastic. When you look at our portfolios as energy and specifically our pipelines have actually been outperforming technology. I don't think a lot of people realize that. And you're starting to see things like financials just had their best 5 months since 2018. You're seeing things like healthcare just had their best quarter since 2022. And a lot of the markets are really starting to broaden out. So I don't think we're at the end of tech here, but I think a lot of other areas have a better valuation, probably more room for the upside. So make sure that you're getting better diversified here as an investor.
All right, let's talk about your word of the day, Courtney. What is it?
Our word of the day is temper. We've already touched on this a little bit here, but really markets are starting to temper their expectations that rate cuts are not going to be coming as quickly or as fast as anybody has expected. I do think longer term they're coming down, but people are really starting to realize, okay, economy is on good footing. Those rate cuts might not be in the near immediate future here.
Okay. Is there a top pick that you have with regard to sector or stock?
We've talked a lot about value over growth. Value is trading at about 50% discount to growth right now. What that is, when you look at some of the biggest holdings within value, those are things like healthcare and energy. I do want to make sure that you are continuing to focus on those areas.
All right. There you go. Courtney Garcia, thank you very much. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for having me, as always.
All right. Let's check on the markets right now. The Dow is implied higher by roughly about 135 points. The S&P up by about 19. The NASDAQ up by about 95 as well. Interest rates still ticking slightly higher. We'll keep a close eye on those.
You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.